there. You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley.
Today, I'm really excited to bring you the beginning of a new mini-series called Meet the Farmer. We will hear from local farmers who work tirelessly to bring us our valuable crops and food sources while also maintaining balance with healthy soil, water, and habitat. This episode, we will hear from an organic producer about their day-to-day lives on the farm, their philosophy of working with the land, and how agriculture is helping to conserve our natural resources in the valley. I'm your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner with the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District, and I'm excited to work on this series with my co-worker, Becky Panetta, one of our agricultural conservation planners.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us to meet some of our local farmers.
On this episode, we are talking with Amanda Stevens with Nottinghamshire Farms in St. Paul. I am so excited to have you join me today on the podcast. So big welcome to you, Amanda.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So yeah, thank you so much for being our first guest on this new mini series. We're really excited to share the stories of local farmers with our listeners and kind of bridge a gap in understanding between urban residents and more rural residents and farmers. So to start off, could you start by telling us a little bit about your farm and what you grow and how did you come to start farming in the Willamette Valley?
My husband and I have Nottinghamshire Farms that we started in the end of 2018, and it is an organic fruits and vegetables farm. We mainly sell wholesale with a little bit of direct to consumer, and both of us grew up farming quite differently. My husband grew up on a dairy farm in England, and I grew up here on this farm doing grass seed and cannery crops. And then we were asked to manage my family farm back in 2014. And we did that for a few years and then broke off and started Nottinghamshire. And we currently grow 18 different crops, all fresh market, organic. And it's just something that's evolved over time. When we first started farming here in St. Paul, we started with two crops and the business has evolved and changed over time. A couple years ago, we had to drop our cannery crops and kind of adjust the types of crops we grow and kind of base it around when the harvest is so we could have a good flow of labor.
Great. So while you're both definitely not new to farming at all, you have Nottinghamshire has started recently, fairly recently. What would you say that your farming philosophy is?
For us, it's all about balance. We aim to produce top quality produce while farming in a way that cares for land, but also it comes down to business. Farming is a business, and we farm for profit at the end of the day, which may not be a popular opinion, but it's a necessity. If we want to be around, we need to make sure we make a profit. So we can invest back in our business and we can invest back in our people who work with us. And importantly, invest back in the land that is our business.
Right. I think that's really important to mention too, as your bottom line is profit, because that's something that we've thought about a lot just in the Soil and Water Conservation District is how we want to engage farmers more in conservation practices. And ultimately, you know, it always comes down to the cost benefit ratio. And so, like you said, sometimes that might not be a popular opinion for people, but like that's how you make change feasible. So that is definitely important to remember.
Yes, And that is like for any new practice we want to do, it always comes down to how does it pencil out? There are lots of conservation practices that we would love to do, but it doesn't pencil out. And we can't put money into something like that if it means taking away money from our employees or investing in our business so we can be around for the next couple years.
What are some of the things that you enjoy the most about farming?
Really, just the actual farming, the working of the land, the planting the seeds, the caring for the crops, the harvest. Those are the things that, you know, just gives you a thrill, gives you that adrenaline boost, the excitement when you sell your harvest and it was a good sell, like you actually made money and it was a good quality crop. All that just brings so much joy. And working outside, working with the land and the people we get to work with, those are the really lovely things that keep us going. And it's more and more important these days to try and keep remembering those, especially in the depths of winter when I'm up to my eyeballs in paperwork. It's getting harder and harder these days. I mean, for us as organics, we've got all our organic inspections and all the paperwork and regulations that go along with that. We're also GAP certified, which is a food safety. We also have to figure out all the FSMA regulations, which is the Food Safety Modernization Act. And that's just for the farming bit. And then you get OSHA comes in and state regulations and federal regulations. I tell my husband sometimes I have a hard time remembering that I'm actually a farmer and not just an office person.
Yeah, so it sounds like organic farming especially comes with its own special suite of challenges that is different than just conventional farming. So what inspired you to choose to go with organic farming, and what types of practices are needed for that type of farming?
Well, we actually just kind of fell into it. It was when we took over my family farm, that was what was presented. It was organic, transitional, and conventional. And then we just kind of kept on the path to taking everything towards organic. But it's definitely a path we've chosen to stay with. We like the type of farming we do. We like the way we do it, but it takes a lot of hand labor, like an insane amount of hand labor, especially for our size. We're not technically small. We are very far from being large. We're the ones being squeezed out the middle. And it's hard because there is technology. Like I had a conversation with a guy down in California who builds laser weeders. And he's on the second generation. And the first generation cost, I think it was a little over $1.2 million for this laser weeder. And he's like, well, I've got it down to about $500,000 or
$600,000. Wow.
So we're getting there. We're still far out, but it's getting there. But the thing is, while we're waiting to get there, all these big guys are getting bigger. Mm. So it's hard. But in organics, hand labor, we hoe everything, we hand weed things on our hands and knees, and things like our strawberries are all hand picked. A good portion of our crops are hand harvested, except for our corn and our potatoes. And things like a good fertilizer program and good soil amendments are essential to keeping our crops going because they all equal healthy plants. So in organics, there's not a lot of options. And so the healthier your plants are, the better chance they have of fighting through insect damage or diseases. And that's something we've actually really enjoyed witnessing, is instead of going out there and spraying like a herbicide, sometimes the practices that we use are just as effective. Sometimes they're not. They're a little bit less effective, but they do work to a point. And that's where it comes down to educating the consumer that a perfect apple, really, does it matter that it's beautiful and shiny on the outside? It tastes just as good, if not better, with the farming practices that we're using.
Right. So can you go into some of the soil amendments that you mentioned that are particularly helpful for organic farming?
For us, the biggest one is actually the simplest one. It's compost. And it works wonder. There's just nothing like good old compost. We've used different kinds over the years. Currently, we're using chicken. Cow manure is also lovely and highly recommend it. There's, you just can't beat the good old stuff.
Oh, you make your own compost?
We don't. We buy ours in from a local guy, and it's certified organic, and it's certified compost, which means that he goes through a procedure of turning and temperature checking and all that. And that's just something that you figure out over time. There are things worth hiring out for. Mm. You cannot do everything.
So have you, I believe Becky has mentioned before that you've also used some cover crops on the farm?
Yes. So that is something we have done since the beginning, is cover cropping. And it is, we see the benefits. Most of our cover crop, well, it depends on your tier. Some of it gets turned back in, and then some of it gets silaged for a local dairy. And that right is the perfect example of that balance of conservation and economy. Mm-hmm. And it's, we really enjoy, we actually think we, even though the bits that are getting silaged, there is enough green matter that's getting turned back in that we still see the benefit.
Mm, awesome. So it's really about using everything you can in some way on the farm. So it's not like really preventing waste of any kind.
Yes, efficiency. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, when it comes to how we run our business, efficiency is key.
Just a quick update. If you are now joining us, I'm here with farmer Amanda Stevens from Nottinghamshire Farms. And you're listening to Meet the Farmer, a mini-series featured on Willamette Wake Up on KMUC Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org.
So we've talked a little bit about the challenges that you face on your farm. What do you think is the biggest challenge or discomfort that you face in organic farming?
Well, this is actually probably the biggest challenge in agriculture in Oregon overall, and it's the agriculture over time. It doesn't matter if you're a dairy farmer, if you're a cattle rancher, you're whatever type of farmer, this is a huge deal. And in organics, it's even bigger deal because, as I mentioned, we use a lot of hand labor. So this year in Oregon, we have 48 hours a week to farm in. And I know that might seem extreme, like, oh, well, you can still pay overtime. Yes, I can pay overtime. My employees actually, I've paid it a couple times, and most of the money ends up going to the government in taxes. And so it's just not economical to continue on that path. And it hurts because when we get paid for our crop, we get paid the same amount. After 48 hours of work, they don't just pay us time and a half. And it hurts because I think the public, just because of time, has lost the idea of what seasonal work actually is. When in the middle of harvest, you're working 50, 55 hours, sometimes a 60-hour week, but you don't do that all year round. We do that maybe 12, 16 weeks out of the year, and then you're back down to like 40, sometimes less than that. In the middle of winter, if like when we had that snow, I think we maybe worked 15 hours that week. It was one of those things, it's like, let's just not bother being very cold and wet.
And yeah, I would hope you would give yourself some breaks in the off season to kind of balance out that heavy workload in the growing season.
And that's what it is. That's what this type of farming is. And that, I think this ag overtime is a real slap to farmers and agricultural workers all up and down the West Coast, because it is changing everyone's lives extremely intimately. A good portion of our crew wants to work as many hours as possible during the season. And then a good portion of them actually go back to Mexico with their families, and they have a couple months off, and it's their lifestyle. They grew up doing that. They do that now. And it's sad that a different way of life is being forced upon them, and it's being forced upon us as well. And I could keep going much longer than I need to on that, but it's the truth. Another challenge is buying land, getting in there. For young beginning farmers, it is extremely difficult just to get your foot on the ladder. There's a whole generation retiring without successors, and some of them just want the buyout. And there's investment groups and things like that that can afford to buy land outright. And it's very difficult for beginning young farmers or first generation farmers. And this goes into the cost of living or the cost of farming. It's expensive. And I know everyone can relate to that. When you go to the grocery store, how much things cost. And I wish it's not the farmer making the money. And I can tell you as a wholesale farmer that my distribution companies tack on 25%. The grocery store then tacks on another 20 to 25% as well. And that's completely out of our control. We, as a farmer, I very rarely get to set my price on anything. And that's something over the last decade, as I've learned this fresh market industry, I've become more vocal and pushy with my buyers. And that has helped a lot. And it's helped the whole industry. And it's helped my neighbors who also, some of them farm the same type of crops we do. If I push for a higher price, it means they're going to get a higher price. And if we're all getting a fair, higher price that actually pays for our crop and puts us in the black, then everyone wins. And then I think I mentioned this before, just all the regulations. It feels like death by paperwork sometimes. I know some of them were good intentions regulations, but it feels like it does get over just out of hand. When I have to be able to, someone told me once, I have to be able to eat a salad off my packing line. Why? I bet you can't eat a salad off your own kitchen counter.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's so true. That seems like such a like kind of arbitrary like standard to place too.
It does. And this is, I get asked this a lot as an organic grower going, oh, it's wonderful. I bet you can just eat your produce out of the field. Well, yes, I do, but I work out there and I live out here and my body is in tune to that. You always should wash your produce. It doesn't matter what type of farming it grew in or anything like that. I mean, there are birds, there are deer, and this is where those regulations are so frustrating. You've got some regulations that are requiring you to deter wildlife, and then you've got other regulations that are like, you need to encourage wildlife.
Oh my gosh.
We need to put more responsibility back onto the consumer, not only for what they do with their produce, but where they buy their produce from and what kind of produce they are buying. Because if they actually really do want local or organic or anything like that, they need to support that, not with only their voices, but with their dollars. There are things like, we still have Brussels sprouts in the field that we are now giving away to gleaners in a group called Salem Harvest. Because the Mexican Brussels sprouts are now flooding in over the border at half the price.
Oh, wow.
And this started about a month ago. And there's other crops like that all over the valley where you potentially could have good, fresh, local winter produce and vegetables. But because it's coming in from California or I guess it's more Arizona and Mexico right now, the Oregon farmers are just shutting it down because it's not worth it.
Well, you have mentioned before some of your top priorities and that, you know, your bottom line is definitely profits and being able to continue farming and being able to make a living for you and your workers and laborers and everything. But can you go into a little bit of some of the other priorities on the farm in terms of managing your natural resources and what some of your biggest conservation needs are?
Well, some of our biggest practices are, we've talked about the cover crop, and we do plant some flowers because we have a lot of beehives that come out on the farm. So it's good to make sure that in between flowering of our crops, they have options. We've got hedgerows that we keep up. So there's places for the birds. And that's one of those creatures that we love and hate all in one. Mm-hmm. Birds do a really good job on insect control. But they also, if they get hungry, they go after our strawberries. Yeah, that's just part of farming is you're out in nature and you get nature.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't really control all aspects of nature. There's always going to be pros and cons with anything.
Yes, and I think it's just finding that acceptability of where your losses lie and where you put your control. We had we have a section of the farm, and that it feels like that little like half an acre always gets bombarded by squirrels or deer or something, and we're always trying to find which crop can we put there that they're not going to eat, and we're still looking for that crop. But yes, those are definitely some of the things we work on. And then water. Water is a huge deal in the West, not just in the Willamette Valley, but all over the West. And water conservation, as farmers, we're careful on what we irrigate, how we irrigate. I guess it's a huge request to the public that they do the same, because we're all getting water from the same aquifers in general, like different ones in different areas. But if you have the cities and towns watering your lawn in July, it takes away from the whole.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that does require some kind of contribution or care from everyone, because everyone uses water.
Yes, that is one I think I wish the cities and the municipalities would be more conscious of. Mm-hmm. It's very irritating when you go into town and you see them watering their flowers, and you know half of that water, you watch it just run off onto the pavement.
So have you made any improvements for irrigation systems, or how do you kind of manage like water on your farm?
We use drip lines for our strawberries, which is very good for that. And then we just try and be careful how much we water. Right now we are still tenant farmers, so we rent. Right. There's not a lot of permanent improvements we can make. So that, again, that's part of that balance of investment. But we're just careful on not overwatering. And then there are times like we share some irrigation sources with other farmers. So there are some times that you end up watering at night, which is better.
Right. I was going to say the timing is everything. Like, it kind of blows my mind sometimes in the summer driving through some rural area, seeing big gun sprinklers. I mean, I'm not a farmer, but that just seems very wrong to me.
Well, sometimes you use them. I mean, we've got two of them. And
right. But in the middle of the day in the summer, it seems like maybe there's a better way to do that.
There can be. And this is where when you're driving through, you don't see the whole picture. So we've got 45 acres of sweet corn. Mm-hmm. And we are on a time that you've got to get around and get every crop watered at a certain time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that means you're running when it's 95. Because if you don't run when it's 95, that means the next irrigation run is not going to get irrigated for an extra 12 hours. So it is hard. There are times you're like, I wish I didn't have to irrigate when it was 95. Mm-hmm. And there are times that we will turn off. Like, it's the times that we'll turn off is mainly when it's windy. If it's picking up and you're irrigating the road, you turn off.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you clarified that, because this is why we're here. Like, now I'm glad that I have that perspective, so that next time I do see that, I, as an urban resident and not a farmer, have that understanding of there's a reason that they're doing this. It's not just being irresponsible with water.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why we do it. I can't speak for everyone, mm-hmm. but most of the time, if you're running again, you're probably on a schedule. So mm-hmm. we have a schedule of how often we need to get around. And there are times that you're like, if the weather or it's super cloudy, you're like, actually, I've got an extra day in here. We can take a day off, and you take a day off. Mm-hmm. But it's all about being in tune with your soil and your plants and actually physically being out there and checking it. But we are lucky enough, we've got some older neighbor farmers who farm organically and farm vegetables that we've been able to ask questions of and just glean information. And even just, it sounds silly, looking over the fence. It's such an old time farmer thing to do. You seriously just got to watch how you drive sometimes. But yes, that is where I think we have been able to glean from other people. And then a lot of it is just been by trial and error, and it hurts. And there's been things like when we had that heat dome, we were asking our neighbors, like, what have you guys, how do you deal with this? They're like, I don't know. We've never dealt with this before. So there are things that we're all learning at the same time. And especially like with the economy and the social structure around all these laws and regulations, a lot of these old guys are learning along with us. But the good things that we get from them are just how they farm and the way they've come up with farming certain ways or certain varieties. And it's you give and take. Sometimes you take that information and use it. Sometimes you take it and think about it and just don't use it.
Well, I think that's a good segue into our next question. Do you have any words of encouragement or thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners or even anyone who's interested in starting an organic farm?
Yeah, I think there's still hope in local agriculture. I think it comes down to, especially in this day and age, how the consumer supports us, not only with their voices, but with their dollars. And that if you already are farming, to keep pushing for a higher price, not just for more money, but to make sure, and where that comes in, make sure you know your cost of production first, because that will help support what you're asking the buyers for. And it'll keep you in business. If you don't know your cost of production, you're not going to survive. I say this in a good way. You will fail. But it's how you pick yourself back up and learn. And everyone fails. That's the thing, is no one's out there perfectly farming. The people who have been farming for decades are still learning things. And if you're not, then you're probably not doing it right.
So would you say you encourage listeners and anyone to find ways to buy organic produce at the grocery store?
I would say I encourage them to support their local farmer. Whether they're organic, they're local, they're certified, they're not. I think it comes down to, if we can keep our local, especially in my, just talking produce, if you can keep those local produce markets open and going, it will make us more self-sufficient and stable just as a community. If we're buying less from out of state, out of country, that means you're buying more around here, which means your dollars are staying local, and it all just keeps supporting each other. Because I have am more in the black, I'll be able to afford to do more conservation practices, invest in my irrigation infrastructure. If I can do that, that means my business is stable, which means I should hopefully be around longer, which means my employees have secure jobs. And it's a good domino effect.
Before we get to our final question, Amanda, I just wanted to thank you for joining us today and helping shed a light on some of the issues that agriculturists and farmers face on a daily basis that aren't always seen by the consumers. So thank you so much for joining us today and sharing that. Our final question for you is, do you have any upcoming news or events that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, come out and see me. We have a little farm store and it opens up in May. I sell some dahlia tubers that are bred by a local lady. We have honey that comes from the bees on our farm. And hopefully mid to late May, our strawberries come in. And then it just expands with all our 18 different crops over the summer. So we really enjoy having people come out, visit the farm. That's just been a nice ray of sunshine over the last couple of years since we started our own business, just meeting the public and speaking to them and having them give feedback on our produce.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know farmers are constantly, they have a lot going on, like you mentioned. But like Becky said, we really do appreciate hearing your story and your perspective, and hopefully, you know, shedding a light onto folks who aren't out there in the fields every day to understand what it takes to get healthy, good quality organic produce to our tables, which is so important.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, ladies, for having me on and listening to my thoughts.
We've been talking with Amanda Stevens, co-owner and farmer with Nottinghamshire Farms today. And we are your hosts. I'm Chelsea Blank.
And I'm Becky Panetta.
And we are conservation planners for the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for tuning in to our first episode in our new mini-series called Meet the Farmer. I hope you enjoyed learning about one of our local farmers doing amazing work to conserve our shared natural resources in the valley. If you like what you heard today, please tune in for our May and July episodes to hear more from local farmers working to implement conservation on their farms. Every effort counts, and together we can make a difference in conserving our natural resources. If you'd like more information on this topic, please visit our website at marionswcd.net and our Facebook page for follow-up information and resources on how you can contribute to local conservation efforts. Also, sharing this podcast with others is a great way to spread awareness and encourage positive action. And tune in next month to KMUZ to hear Conservation Spotlight from Polk SWCD at 100.7 or 88.5 FM on the third Wednesday every month during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening, and keep up the conservation conversation.